Hello and welcome once more to the International Soccer Preview by Soccerphiles Canada. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor. And today we will be updating the final round of CONCACAF qualifying for World Cup 2022 for Mexico. Before the round, we did a team preview and a player preview for each team. We won't be repeating all that information here, but we do urge you to check out those podcasts at our website at soccerphiles.captivate.fm. Let's summarize the information covered in each of those podcasts. We gave a more detailed summary in our first podcast of this series, which was for Canada's team. But I'll turn it over to you, Kev.
Yeah, so we'll keep the summary shorter here. But in general, at the beginning of this qualifying round, we went through each country, a podcast for each country's team and a podcast for each country's players. And in the team podcast, we gave some information on the country, so geography and demographics and stuff like that. And then we gave a summary of their history in the World Cup competition and in regional competition. We spent a bit more time looking at their recent history. In that team podcast, we took a brief look at their players, kind of focused around their goal scorers. And then we looked at the rankings of each team and the head-to-head record with the other teams in the group. And we ended with a discussion of their schedule and prospects.
Yeah, and for each of the player podcasts, we organized the team into positions and looked at the players who had been filling those positions in recent times. We gave some biographical information on them, especially their history with the national team, and predicted who were the main candidates for each position. Again, in this podcast, we won't be repeating all of that. Rather, we will be looking back on how this round has gone for each team and how correct we were in our predictions for their performance and their players. Sometimes we were right, but sometimes players we expected to be used were not, and new players also came in.
Right. So especially for the player podcast, the original one we did and this one are more companion pieces. So we gave biographies for the players we expected. In this one, we'll only give biographies for the new players that have come in.
Yeah. And then finally, we will look here towards the future and discuss the prospects of the teams and the players from this midpoint forward. So let's begin. Here we'll be looking at Mexico after having played 8 of their 14 games.
Right, so not exactly midpoint, but a little bit beyond it. Well, let's see how they've done, Connor.
Yeah, they have a record of 4 wins, 2 draws, and 2 losses. Those 2 losses coming in their last 2 games on the road in the USA and then on the road in Mexico. They currently sit in 3rd, but just 2 points off 1st. You know, they'll probably be satisfied with most of those results. That said, you know, some of the games, you know, were a little bit closer perhaps than expected. They took a late penalty to beat Jamaica in their opener, and then a late goal to beat Jamaica in their opener, and then a penalty to beat Costa Rica 1-0 on the road in their second game. Their other wins were home to Honduras and away in El Salvador. And even that El Salvador game, it wasn't really wrapped up until a 93rd-minute penalty that sealed the deal 2-0.
Right. Having said that, you know, their last 2 losses, again, in USA and in Canada, are probably their 2 toughest games. They've also played 5 of the 8 games on the road. So we can expect that to be kind of evened up in the second half of the schedule.
Yeah, that's right. So overall, I mean, there's not really a threat of them kind of not qualifying at this point, I would say. But I would also say that they haven't, you know, been at their very best. They haven't blown teams away. You know, they haven't run away with things. You know, those couple draws, couple losses on the road, you know, kind of, and some of the performances too, kind of enough to get by, but not dominant. You know, like they perhaps would hope, or their fans, I think, would expect them to be.
Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned the most salient point, which is they're currently sitting 3rd in the table and pretty much tied with Panama in 4th. They dropped down from 1st place to 2nd after their loss in the USA and to 3rd after their loss in Canada. But honestly, like, I think people have the impression that, you know, Mexico and the US, but Mexico kind of dominates the region, and they do. But when we did the kind of the history podcast, we saw that, you know, that wasn't always the case. Sometimes they're kind of squeaking through the region. Sometimes they didn't even make it. And it's not really that unusual for them to drop some points along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. They always get to the World Cup, but when you look, take a deeper look at the qualifying, you know, it, it does show that they do have their challenges, and that they don't walk all over the region, despite the fact that they get to the World Cup in the end. You know, those who kind of pay attention to the qualifying know that, you know, they do face tricky games. They do drop points. They even drop points at home. They don't have it all their own way, and that's the case again here.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll take a look at those upcoming games, kind of these the last six games, second half of the schedule, I've been calling it. We'll take a quick look at who's been scoring for them. And I think so one outstanding point there, Connor.
Yeah, 11 goals scored from 11 different players. Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah, a couple goals from all over. Some names you'd expect to be there: Jimenez, Moreno, Lozano, Corona. You know, they're all on the score sheet, but just the one goal so far, for everyone who scored. So a little bit surprising, eight games in, no one's yet found double figures.
Yeah, I mean, especially, especially the forwards, Funes Mori and Jimenez, and even some of the attacking midfielders like Lozano and Corona, you'd kind of expect a few more goals from.
Yeah, for sure.
Going back to that game over El Salvador, which said you said it wasn't as convincing as the scoreline. They did overcome a red card there at 67 minutes into the game. So I suppose a 2-0 win in light of that is pretty good. That's their only red card so far.
Yeah. Yeah, after eight games, they sit with a +4 goal differential, you know, 11 scored, 7 conceded. So, perhaps not scoring as many and perhaps letting in a few more than some people might have expected.
Yeah, having said that, it's hard to see them not at least finishing in the top three.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at the formations. And I think in the initial podcast, we said that they pretty regularly play a 4-3-3. And they didn't actually start that way. For the first two games, they started with a 4-2-1-3. Sorry, a 4-2-3-1. And then they went back to their regular formation for most of the other games, except for the last one against Canada, where they played 3 defenders, 5 midfielders, and 2 forwards. So perhaps a bit more of a defensive formation against Canada in the Ixteca Stadium.
That's right. We were there. Perhaps using wingbacks in that game to counter the threat of Alphonso Davies and Tejon Buchanan, wanting to have that extra insurance in the middle of defense and have a couple wingbacks, you know, trying to mark those two dangerous Canadian players.
Yeah. True enough. Okay, well, we're going to move on to players here, and we'll start out with the manager who we introduced in the initial podcast, Gerardo Martino. So any kind of comments there? Is he in trouble after those last two games, last two losses, Connor?
You know, despite those losses and despite sitting in third, I haven't heard, you know, calls for his head. There's nothing really too remarkable there for the manager, I would say. Mexico did lose an appeal of a stadium ban due to negative chanting by their fans. So that could have taken place earlier, but was delayed because of the appeal. But having lost that, their men's team will play their next two home games behind closed doors.
Yeah, and just on a personal note, we were hoping that ban would be in effect when Canada visited Mexico, but it was still under appeal, or I think they were trying to get the games to be women or youth games or something like that rather than the men's team.
Yeah, and, that's right.
Now, yeah. So anyway, it looks like we'll just kind of flip back and see who benefits from that. No, we'll tell you at the end of the podcast who benefits from that. Let's move on to talking about goalkeepers.
Yeah,
Maybe
no,
you can pick this one too.
for sure. So no real surprise in net. Guillermo Ochoa has started all 8 games. Rodolfo Couto has been on the bench 7 of the 8 games. Jonathan Orozco for 5, and Alfredo Talavera, who was our starter in the Gold Cup, has been on the bench for 4. Interestingly, Rodolfo Couto is the youngest of these at 34 years old. We mentioned Sebastian Jurado as a potentially next generation keeper coming into the picture. However, neither he nor a couple of other younger candidates have made the bench so far.
All right, so it's Ochoa all the way, or Choa all the way, as far as goalkeepers go. It gets a little bit more complex when we get down to defenders. So we look at the central defenders first. Mexico went with a four-man defense in all but the last game there. But for the first 4 games, the central defense was Néstor Araujo. Do you know how to say that?
No, I'll go with Araujo as well.
Araujo and Cesar Montes. Araujo was expected, but Montes was a surprise since he hadn't seemed a primary candidate in our initial assessment. Veteran Hector Moreno was expected to play, and he did play the following 2 games, 3 and 4. Sorry, I'm a bit lost here. Was expected to play and played the next 2 games, and it was Moreno and Araujo in game 6. So strangely, they switched to new centre backs for game 7 and 8, which, especially considering that they were two tough away games in the USA and Canada. I gotta say, Connor, that was a bit of a baffling decision, and they lost both games.
Yeah, certainly curious. They I think took a bit more of a defensive position. Like we said with Canada, they added in, an extra defender. So curious that they would make a change right at the heart of their defense.
Yeah, so Montes was not called up for the last 3 games, and Moreno for the last 2, and Araujo for game 7. So whether they were not available to the team, it seemed a bit of an odd decision to make such a big game right before their, sorry, make such a big change right before their biggest games. But we will move on to some other candidates. Of course, we said that the defenders switched for the last 2 games. It was Johan Vasquez, who had only ever played 2 friendlies for the for the national team, and paired with 34-year-old Julio Cesar Dominguez, who had recently returned from a 3-year absence from the national team. Those two became the starters, and as I think I mentioned, they were joined by Néstor Araujo in. Well, it was actually a 3-man back line for the last game, but as you said, those wingers on the sides took a bit of a more defensive position. So, in our assessment, we had also expected Carlos Salcedo as part of the central defense, but he was never selected despite starting most Gold Cup games. If you recall from our last podcast, we had noticed that he was booed by fans. He missed a penalty, but it seemed to be a bit more to it than that. He didn't seem that popular. And Diego Reyes, who we also mentioned, has not appeared for the team since 2019. Finally, we mentioned Gilberto Sepulveda. He continues to look a future prospect as he was on the bench for 4 of the games here. And that is central defenders.
Yeah, very interesting. The position at left back, that was quite straightforward. Jesus Gallardo started 7 of the 8 games, moving up to midfield and in the formation change for the last game against Canada. And it was Osvaldo Rodriguez, who started game 6.
Right, so Gallardo certainly has nailed down that position. Right backs is a little less complicated, a little less straightforward. Do you want to take that one too, Connor?
Sure. So Luis Rodriguez was expected in our initial assessment, but he only started games 5 and 7. He otherwise subbed into one game, was on the bench for two, and was not selected for the first two and the last one game. Jorge Sanchez and Julio Cesar Dominguez played the position otherwise, surprisingly so, since they had not kind of made our radar on the initial podcast. Jorge Sanchez should have given. Should have we probably should have mentioned him, given that he played regularly before the 2021 Gold Cup. He did not make the squad for that team because he was on the Olympic roster. He played the right back position in games 1, 3, 4, and 8, moving up to midfield role in the new formation of game 8. 34-year-old Julio Cesar Dominguez was starting right back for games 2 and 6. As we saw, he moved to central defense for the last two games. He was an unlikely selection, having last played in the 2015 Gold Cup, except for appearing in two friendlies in late 2018. Other candidates had been the veteran Miguel Layún, but he last played in October 2020. Edson Álvarez once played this position, but he has moved up to midfield. Finally, Kevin Álvarez was on the bench for the Gold Cup, but he was never called up for these qualifiers.
Right, so I think in our initial podcast we had kind of pegged Luis Rodriguez as the as the starting right back. Not unlike Gallardo, he seemed to have the position nailed down, if I recall. But it looks like Jorge Sanchez is the main candidate right now.
Yeah, it definitely appears to be.
Yeah. But maybe still in flux a little bit that one. But we'll move on to midfielders and take a look at the defensive midfielders first.
Sure. So other players do step into the defensive slash central midfielder role, usually on the left or right of the three-man midfield. Actually, I'm gonna jump back a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I maybe confused you there. Sometimes we combine the defensive and central midfielders. For Mexico, I think there's room to talk about them separately, even though they're not completely separable. But they have a few players who do focus more on defense.
Sure, I'll start there instead. So yeah, the mainstays are Edson Álvarez and Hector Herrera. With Luis Romo taking an increasingly bigger role. The three only played game 7 together, with several other players stepping in for a game or two here and there. As mentioned above and in the initial assessment, Edson Álvarez used to be a left back, but his move to defensive midfield now seems to be permanent. He started 6 of the 8 games. Hector Herrera was injured for the first three, but then he started 4 of the next 5. Luis Romo has also started 4 matches. He is fairly new to the team, being first capped in November 2019. He appeared fairly regularly after that, but was not selected for the Gold Cup. Rather, the 26-year-old was one of their three overage players on the Olympic team.
Okay, so I think Mexican fans will be jumping up and down at our classifications here. Hector Herrera being more of a central and slightly more attacking midfielder, say, than Edson Álvarez. But as we've said several times before, the positions are really kind of a way of organizing it, and players don't really, fit comfortably into the roles all the time. So, just look at this as kind of our way of organizing it and talking about the players. We'll move on to the central midfield there. Other players stepped into the defensive or central midfielder role, usually on the left or the right side of the three-man midfield. And Carlos Alberto Rodriguez had 3 games. Andre Guardado, who we were wondering would be part of this because he is kind of getting old there. He played 2 games, Orbelin Pineda, who's actually an attacking midfielder, played two games. And Jonathan Dos Santos, who we expected to play more than one game, but he did just play the one. And Sebastian Cordova, also an attacking midfielder, for one game. Of course, it is a 4-3-3, so, you know, it's not a surprise to have a couple of attacking midfielders in that middle three. Just to go over some of those players. Sorry, I should put this up here. So Carlos Alberto Rodriguez was at the Olympics rather than at the Gold Cup in the summer. He's a fairly strong candidate for the position. Meanwhile, 35-year-old veteran Guardado, he earned his 173rd cap in Game 4 against Canada. And Connor, do you have any idea where that puts him in the total caps by football players list, ranking list?
No, 173 for an outfield player is extraordinary. Where does he land?
Where would you say?
I'd guess maybe top 20.
Oh, good one. So that puts him as the 13th
wow.
in the most capped football player in history. And if I have it right, I think he's still about 50 games behind the top one or two players. But still pretty impressive. Orbelin Pineda was a bit of an odd choice for Game 6 and 8, as he's usually a forward or a winger rather than a central midfielder. But again, not a huge shock there. To me, a bit more surprising was Jonathan Dos Santos. He and Eric Gutierrez both played that position in the 2021 Gold Cup, but they really weren't factors in these qualifying games. The start for Dos Santos in Game 3 was his only appearance, and on top of that, he was subbed out at halftime. And meanwhile, Gutierrez was not called up at all.
Yeah, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll move over to midfielders and wingers. And just a general comment on that. Mexico tried, you know, a couple of different formations this time, but in their typical 4-3-3 formation, the wingers become almost like outside forwards. So for ease of discussion, we're just going to combine these.
Yeah, so I'll start with left midfielders and wingers. Alexis Vega, a relatively new recruit from the Olympic team, started in games 1, 2, and 6. However, he subbed out injured at the 41st minute in game 2 and at the 20th minute in game 6. So he never really got established. Orbelin Pineda took over the position for game 3 and Irving Lozano after that, although both also started in other positions for other games. Irving Lozano, who had taken an ugly head injury early in the Gold Cup and was perhaps still recovering when not selected for the first three games, he does seem to be the default player for the position. We also made mention of Diego Lainez in the original podcast. Having played with the Olympic team in the summer, he was injured for the first three games of qualifying and then was never called up.
Right. Okay, well, let's move over to the right side. And the main man on that side is Jesus Manuel Corona. He holds the position pretty firmly and started five games there. And he also subbed in early for two others. He was absent only in the first game where Roberto Alvarado had the position. And, although Alvarado was at best a substitute after that. Irving Lozano, who we have just seen as a left winger, switched to the right side in games where Corona did not start. And finally, someone I expected to see a little more of was Uriel Antuna. He looked to be stepping into the role in 2019, but he was only a substitute here and didn't even make the squad for the last three games.
Right. Looking at attacking midfielders, we identified no starters for the position in the initial assessment. The central midfield role is usually played by a more defensive midfielder, but more attacking players did fill the role with Sebastian Cordova in game 1 and Orbelin Pineda in game six. So this is kind of your quintessential number 10 position, which Mexico doesn't always utilize.
Right.
Henry Martin, Rodolfo Pizarro, Efrain Alvarez, Jesus Angulo, Luis Montes are among a few players designated as an attacking midfielder or secondary striker, but none are very active with the team. Martin subbing in for the first three games and then not used. Pizarro just subbing in for a five-minute cameo appearance in game three. Angulo on the bench for the last game, and Efrain Alvarez not called up at all. Luis Montes, along with a few lesser names, was last called up in 2019. We spent a lot of breath on Carlos Vela, but he seems well and truly off the team now, having last appeared in the 2018 World Cup. He's 32 years old, so not that old, and continues to perform well in Major League Soccer, but not really in the thoughts of the manager.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether he is finished with the Mexican team or whether his head will pop up again. We'll move on to forwards. And in the forward position, surprisingly for a team like Mexico, it's fairly straightforward. Rogelio Funes Mores and Raul Jimenez took turns as the main forward here. Jimenez is probably still the default choice, but he wasn't selected for the first three games. He was available, but probably not fully recovered from that terrible head injury that we talked about. I think last time we said it was at the beginning of the season in 2020, but actually it was in December 2020. So it took about 9 months to recover from that and maybe wasn't comfortable for the first few games here. So Funes Mores started those first games, and Jimenez resumed the role in from game four, but Funes Mores got the start in game six. So sharing the role with Jimenez seemingly favored. We did speculate on Javier Hernandez, but he has made no appearance since September 2019, and he appears to be off the team. Alan Pulido is also mentioned. We talked about him as an example of how difficult it is to break into the team. And as an aside, Connor, I think if there is a theme for Mexico here, it kind of is that theme, how many players they have, but how difficult it actually is for those players to break into the starting lineup. And that proved true here, as Pulido didn't get a sniff of it. He wasn't called up for any of these eight games.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think the Gold Cup and the Olympics and other tournaments, Mexico has a lot of opportunity to try out different players. But, you know, it seems that the World Cup or the World Cup qualifying, you're right, it is hard to kind of break in, you know, with kind of the lineup. And I think a lot of their starting lineup does play overseas in Europe. So they will use more domestic-based players in the Gold Cup and, you know, again, for other tournaments. But you're right, kind of displacing some of those European-based players, you know, playing at teams like Wolves and Atletico Madrid and Porto. It's, you know, those are the ones they kind of rely on for their most important games.
Right, and we must have talked about it in the initial team podcast that, you know, a lot of times, like this summer, they're playing two tournaments. So this time it was the Olympics and the Gold Cup. In 2017, it was the Confederations Cup and the Gold Cup. And a lot of times it's been the Copa America along with the Gold Cup. So they certainly have all the players to cover those tournaments, but it's honestly a bit surprising how few of those players selected for the B team make their way up into the A team. Okay, well, we usually finish by looking at any key substitutes, any new players or any notable absences here, but what ones there were, we've covered. So the substitutes are kind of made up of players who didn't start all the games, but maybe started some of the games. I don't recall any new players here, Connor, do you?
No, not really. Not ones that we hadn't really covered previously in the initial podcast.
Yeah, I mean, again, kind of a sign of how tough it is to break into the team. And then the noticeably absent we kind of covered as we went there. So we're going to move directly on to the default lineup here. Again, usually it's a bit more than 11 players because players share positions, but we'll try to keep it as simple as possible. Here we go.
Starting in net is Guillermo Ochoa. That one is really, there's no questions about that. Central defenders, like I said, they've tried different players, but Nestor Araujo and Cesar Montes appear to be the two starters with Hector Moreno also coming in.
Yeah, and just a little asterisk on that. Again, they changed that for game 7 and 8. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to these veterans.
Yeah. The left back is locked down by Jesus Gallardo. And then right back, Jorge Sanchez, the primary candidate with Luis Rodriguez also coming in. In midfield, Edson Alvarez and Hector Herrera, as well as Luis Romeo, have seen a lot of game time. Carlos Alberto Rodriguez would be another name in consideration. And then for the attacking three, it tends to be Irving Lozano and Jesus Corona on the left and right side. And then, as we mentioned, Raul Jimenez and Rogelio Funes Mori kind of alternating as a lead forward.
Right, and that is a pretty powerful lineup of players, as you say. A lot of those guys playing in Europe. Anything to add on players, or should we move to the upcoming fixtures?
Yeah, let's talk about their six games that remain.
Okay. Well, as we noted at the beginning, four of them are at home. So that's four out of six games being played at home. I think that should pretty much assure them of a top three spot. And three of those are in a row after they play Jamaica away in their next game. It's Costa Rica, Panama, and USA, which is kind of the highlight game, I guess, left in this qualification. And then they finish at home with El Salvador. Go ahead, Connor.
Yeah, the game against USA, a bit of a grudge match, having lost the first one on the road. They've also played Canada twice. They won't play them. They actually only took 1 point from their two games against Canada. So kind of showing how far Canada has come, as we've talked about in that podcast. For Mexico, they have that game at home to the U.S., but they don't play any of the current top two after that. As you mentioned, 4 of 6 at home, they're playing primarily, teams below them in the standings. So not really a threat for them not to qualify. They are tied on points with Panama for 3rd and 4th. But I think with the home games and just their schedule, you would favor them to qualify comfortably.
Yeah, I think that pair of games at home to Panama followed by at home to USA will pretty much define the qualification for them. And my guess is that they'll kind of leave Panama behind them at that point. And then depending on what happens with Mexico and USA, that'll be kind of crucial for where they finish relative to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. They've played 8 games. They've won 4 of them. So they have dropped points, and I expect more points to be dropped. But on the whole, you generally expect them to win their home games. And away games against Jamaica and Honduras, those are two of the bottom three. So very possible they get 3 points there.
Well, at the beginning, we expected Mexico to be, the top team and maybe by a few points. But they currently sit in third. I think we'll both agree that they probably won't end up in third. But will they end up in first, Connor?
I'm going to say yes. That was my prediction at the start, that they would win the round. And I think with their schedule and their home matches, they'll do so. As we've said, they're not going to run away with it. And, it's possible that they may settle, somewhere, second or third and still get through. But I would expect them to be top two. And realistically, I expect them to finish strong and to finish first.
Okay, well, I forgot to use my faux impatience to ask you that question. So I'm going to switch it to this. Give it to me straight, Connor. You've been dodging all along. Who's going to give them the biggest fight, Canada or the USA?
I'm going to say Canada. I think Canada has proven tricky so far. You know, I think that there's a lot of emotion going into that U.S. game. But, you know, Canada, you know, they're done with Mexico. There's not a chance for Mexico to take any more points off them. So I'm going to say Canada finishes second and USA third, but Mexico tops the lot.
All right. Well, I like to hear Canada being favored there. We did mention up at the top there that their next two games were in empty stadiums. So it looks like Costa Rica and Panama will benefit from that. How much of a benefit will it be?
I think it will give a psychological boost to the opponents. The Azteca is such an intimidating atmosphere to go into. So I think it will be a psychological boost. You know, whether that can overcome perhaps the gulf in quality between the teams, I'm not sure. But, you know, as a player, you'd rather play in an empty stadium than a full, you know, full Azteca. So, I think it'll be interesting. You know, if Mexico are going to stumble, you know, it would probably have to be at that, you know, for those two home games, if they were really kind of going to be dragged into a dogfight. I think they'll win, but it's another reason to watch those two games.
Right. I think that does make the game a bit more interesting rather than kind of a guaranteed win for Mexico. But I'm sure with that ruling, they were definitely relieved to be able to play at home in front of their fans against the USA. I think that would probably be the most important thing to them.
Yeah, and like you said, we'll probably have the biggest impact on their final position.
Great. Okay, well, I think we have covered that really well. And once again, I'm going to say it slowly for our listeners. We do have a website now, and we'll kind of improve that over the next few months, I hope. But for now, it is soccerfiles@captivate.fm. So I'll spell that out. Soccer Files is with a PH. So it's SOCCER, Soccer Files, PHILES, dot Captivate, CAPTIVATE, dot FM. Maybe we should work on a bit of a simpler web address, Connor.
Yeah, we'll get there. But yeah, check it out. That's where all our podcasts are posted. And I'll see you next time, Kevin.
You betcha. See you, Connor. Thanks for joining here.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.